think so. Is that good? Okay. Father, grant me the grace to be an instrument of your service this evening. Father, be with each of us. Help us to become aware of those things we need to let go of so that you and the sunlight of the Spirit can enter. Amen. I'm alcoholic named Mary Lou. Okay, today we're doing steps 4 and 5 together. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You have to forgive me for sitting. I'm having some back issues. And if I stood, you might end up taking me out of here in an ambulance. So we don't want that. Right next door. That's true. So why do an inventory? Okay, on page 63 of the big book, it says, next, we launch out on a course of vigorous action. Vigorous action. The first step of which is a personal inventory. Though our decisions was a vital and crucial step, it could not have little permanent effect unless at once we followed it by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us. Our liquor was but one symptom. So we had to get down to the causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon personal inventory. Now, this is a step that a lot of people fear, myself included. You know, we procrastinate, we put off doing it. I can tell you, if you haven't done it yet, you're cheating yourself out of the rewards of this program. You know, in a business, they do at least a yearly inventory, and sometimes a semi-inventory. You know, they count every item they have in stock. They look at what's good. They look at what's obsolete. They look at what is not sellable. You know, and they get rid of that stuff so that new stock, there's room for new stock. You know, I brought 38 years of garbage with me when I came to AA. You know, and there was not much room left inside me for anything good. So until I was ready to face my past and look those things squarely on, freed my soul up for the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, made room for the sunlight of the Spirit. In working the first 3 steps, we laid down a solid foundation for our recovery. Our disease cannot remain arrested unless we build on this foundation. Our disease involves much, much more than just not drinking. The solution to our problem is a profound change in our thinking and behaviors. We need to change how we perceive the world and alter our role in it. We need to change our attitudes in order to find true happiness and serenity. When I came in, they told me, Mary Lou, recovery is simple. You just have to change everything about you. And I wanted to punch him in the face. You know, it was an F you moment. You know? But it is important that we move on. you know, I sponsored a girl, a woman, who 2 months shy of her fourth anniversary, she came to me and she said, I'm going to take a break from AA. And I said, oh, really? And she said, well, yeah, it's just not working for me anymore. Don't have that happiness I had when I first came in. Don't have that spiritual connection that I had. Now, I reminded her that, you know, she's almost 4 years sober, and she only was going to one meeting a week, which she was secretary of. So she wasn't really going to that meeting and being filled. You know, she was there giving. But she wasn't going any place where she was being filled. And she had refused to do her fourth step. And I told her, I said, I love you, but the only way you can find true happiness is to totally work the full program. Now, that was about 9 months ago. And to my knowledge, you know, she's still sober, and she's still miserable. And hopefully, when she gets miserable enough, she will come back to AA and not pick up the drink. You know, the fourth step is time for personal reflection. Now look at your fourth step as a thorough house cleaning. You know, every year in the springtime we clean our house. It's a chance to sort through things. It's a chance to decide what to keep and what to get rid of. It's a chance to discover who I am. You know, when I got here, I had no idea of who I was. I was whoever I needed to be at any moment in time to get what I needed or wanted. You know, the true Mary Lou was totally lost. I had no idea who I was. Now, the spiritual principles that we started in the first three steps help us with step four. Now, the honest acceptance we had in step one will help us to be honest about other aspects of our disease. Step two, we develop some level of trust and faith in a power greater than ourselves. We had a glimmer of hope. Step three, we developed a willingness. And this willingness will help us to find the courage necessary to work the fourth step. You are not alone. You are not alone. What does it mean, the fearless and searching moral inventory? Notice that it says a moral inventory. It's not an immoral inventory. It's not a list of everything you have done wrong your whole life. It's a moral inventory. You know, we take stock in our assets and our liabilities. You know, when I got here, I didn't think I had any assets. I knew I had a whole lot of liabilities. You know, and during the fourth step, we expose the lies that we have been telling ourselves for years. You know, that denial. Now again, I was whoever I needed to be to get what I wanted or needed. Through step four, I began to stop being the person I had invented. I began to stop being the person I had invented and found the freedom to be me. Now, steps one through three freed me from alcohol. Steps four and five freed me to be. To be. Fearless does not mean without fear. Fearless means courage, and courage means strength of the heart. So fearless means feeling fear, but acting from the heart and not letting that fear immobilize me. So yeah, you're going to have fear when you do the fourth step. And that's okay, that's quite normal. But you don't have to let that fear immobilize you. You don't have to let that fear stop you. Step four is a journey in self-discovery. The inventory allows us to look at our basic nature with its flaws and its strengths. You know, we look at our imperfections, but we also look at our hopes, our dreams, our aspirations. And we look at where we've gone astray. We look at what we wish we'd have done differently. And myself, I waited 18 months to start my fourth step. And I did not, I handed out some worksheets that basically is from the big book. Typos are because of spell check, and there was one right on the first page. Column three where it says affects may, it should say affects my. What about me does it affect, but okay. My sponsor had me write. And then when we would go over it, she would point out the things to me about where I was to blame, where I was selfish, where I was inconsiderate. She pointed those things out to me. As I said, I waited 18 months for the to do my inventory, and that was because of the fear. You know, I feared that if I let you see me and know the real me, you would not like me and you would reject me. But my biggest fear was I feared what I might find. I feared that I might find the real person that I was, and it would be somebody I did not like or want to be. You know, I looked at it as, you know, I'm peeling an onion, you know, layer by layer by layer, and you know, you got tears going. But, you know, some onions look pretty good, but when you get down to the core, you know, they're pretty icky and stinky, and that's what I figured, that's what I feared I would find when I got to my core. Was icky, stinky, disgusting, obnoxious somebody that I did not want any part of. Okay, but the pain, the emotional pain of not drinking and facing life on life's terms became so great after 18 months that I knew that I was either going to drink or kill myself, or do what you suggested. And so I started writing. You know, I would write and write and write, and when the emotional pain became so great I couldn't stand it, I'd call my sponsor and I'd go over to her house and we'd go over it. Now, you don't have to worry about what you are writing. One of the things I have discovered is God only reveals to me what I'm capable of handling in this moment right now. Now, it doesn't reveal it all to us at once because we couldn't handle that. At least I couldn't. One of the fellowships that patterns themselves after AA has a saying that I just love, and it is, and more will be revealed. Okay? And more will be revealed. And that's why we have step 10. Okay. Don't try to do step four perfectly. I sponsored one girl who, when she came to me, she had a 55-page printout from her computer. Okay. we chop that down a little bit. You know, but it's important that we put it down on paper. You know, sometimes we think, well, I know all this. I got to float, you know, it's up here. But when all this garbage is just floating around up in your head, you aren't making connections. You aren't seeing patterns. So you need to put it down on paper. And you'll be able to see what motivated you to do, to act the way you did. You'll see the repercussions of your behavior had on your own life. How did your behavior impact others? How did we harm ourselves and others? How do we feel about the actions, our actions, and the reactions of others? Self-discovery. The Big Book suggests that we look at three areas: resentments, fears, and relationships. Or as they call it, sex. I loved it when I read when I first read page 68, and it said, now about sex. That got my attention, that paragraph. So. And when you're looking at your resentments, chances are you need to put yourself on that list. Chances are you have huge resentments towards yourself. You know, and a resentment is simply a rethought, an anger that you keep rethinking about. You know, somebody cut you off in line in 1983 and you're still pissed off about it today. Okay, on page 64. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. Resentment destroys more alcoholics than anything else. In dealing with resentments, we set them down on paper. We list people, institutions, and principles with whom we are angry. We ask ourselves, why are we angry? In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbook, our ambitions, or our personal relationships, including sex, had been hurt or threatened. So when we get real, real honest, my resentment comes from my trying to control you and you not letting me. It comes back to me. What in me was being hurt? Pride, ego, our pocketbook. Somebody's getting some money that we think should be ours. Somebody gets a promotion we think should be ours. But it all comes back to self. And on in page 66, it talks about how fatal resentments are to the alcoholic. With alcoholics, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it was fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves out from the sunlight of the spirit. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. I do want to make one thing clear. Anger is normal. You know, our emotions are gifts from God. And yeah, I'm going to get angry because I'm not a saint. But the important thing is I do not allow that anger to become a resentment in my head. That I deal with it now. that I don't wake up tomorrow morning and still be pissed off over something that you did to me today. I need to deal with it today, not allow it to become a resentment. You know, don't allow somebody to live rent-free in your head. Okay, if resentments are so fatal and destroy more alcoholics than anything else, how do we get rid of them? And it's laid out for us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 67. Now you hear all the time, pray for them, pray for them. But we need to go on beyond that. There's more involved in getting rid of the resentment than just prayer, praying for the person. Okay. People who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms, the way they disturbed us, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God, and this is a prayer, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. This is the part that's the hardest for me. How can I be of help to him? How can I be of help to that person that I'm pissed off at? Service. God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. It goes on to say that we must avoid retaliation at all costs. And that, you know, when I, in my drinking and using, I mean, I was out to get you. I mean, I was going to get you before you got me. Yeah, and I would be very, very patient. And I could get you with a smile on my face, and nobody around you would know you were got but you. Page 552. If you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them, and your prayers are only words, and you don't mean it, go ahead and pray anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks, and you will find you have come to meet, you will find you have come to mean it and want it for them. You will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion and understanding and love. So the answer to our resentments is prayers. And remember that we're to be of service to those that we resent. You know, then it tells us once we get our list done, I didn't mention this earlier, they suggest that you do one column at a time. You go down and you list everybody, everything, every possible thing you have a grudge against. And then you go to column two and you fill that in, and then you go to column three and you fill that in. You know, and once you're done, you go back to your list. referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done us. Doesn't matter what they did to you or me. We We looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other person's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set the matter straight. And then they suggest you go on and you do the same thing with fears and with relationships. And it comes back to this all the time. On page 69, after it's talked about sex and relationships, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy in someone else, suspicion or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got it all down on paper and looked at it. It keeps going back to where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I self-centered? And then I like this part in towards the end of step four, where it's page 70. Suppose we fall short of our chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so. But this is only a half truth. It depends upon us and our motives. What are your motives? If we are truly sorry for what we have done and we have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. This is not theorizing. These are facts out of our own experience. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards men, even our enemies. For we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten these things out. And then we go on, immediately go to step five. And don't hang on to your fourth step. You know, find somebody you trust to share it with. You know, it's important that you admit it to God. And I thought, well, God already knows all this. Why do I got to tell him? But by saying, I read it out loud to God, and it made it more real for me. I knew that I wasn't trying to keep any more secrets. And then another human being. Yeah. By sharing it makes them real. You know, by sharing it, it increases our trust. We begin to learn humility because we're looking at who we really, really are, not those lies we've been telling ourselves. We begin to get an honest picture of ourselves. Now, on page 72 of the big book, must be entirely honest with someone if we expect to live long and happily in this world. As I said, I procrastinated on my fourth step because I had big dark secrets and I didn't want to share them with anybody. And I'm sharing them tonight because 1 in 4 people suffer from the same abuse that I suffer from, and I think in alcoholics it's even more. I was sexually abused by my father from the age of 5 to 11. I hated that man. I allowed that hate to eat me up inside. It reflected on my relationship with God because people said, God's your father. Well, you know, my father hurt me. And therefore, I believed that God was going to hurt me too. And so I had a whole lot of trouble trusting God. You know, what was my part in this? You know, I put him on my resentment list. What was my part? You know, I was a little girl. I didn't ask for this. I didn't want this. And I didn't know how to stop it. So I didn't have any part there. But my part became, as I became an adult, and I allowed this soul sickness to impact every relationship I had with a man. You know, I carried it on into my adulthood. You know, this is a program of forgiveness. You know, to me, forgiveness is giving up the hope that my past can be different. My past can't be different. Though painful and sad, my past cannot be changed. But my warped beliefs about me and my world can be changed. And that's the part I can change, is my belief system. You know, my father suffered from an obsession of the mind that made him do things to hurt people that he loved. Does that sound familiar? Did our obsession of our mind lead us to hurt people that we love? No, he had a soul sickness. Now, my father committed suicide in 1974. So the only way he knew out of his soul sickness, his emotional torture, was to take his life. And I didn't have to do that. I came to you people, and you gave me a program of recovery. So eventually, first, I began to pity my father. And this pity, with prayer, became forgiveness. Now, forgiveness is not a weakness. Now, for years I blamed God, but God gives people free will. It was not God that did those things to me. It was not God that was hurting me. It was a man who was spiritually sick. Today I am free. And if you want to be free, let go of your secrets. Share those secrets. I don't have the luxury of staying angry and being the victim. You know, if someone or something is owning your soul. It's because you are allowing it. And you can change that with prayer. Now, step 4 and 5 freed me from my painful secrets. I was very angry and felt I had every right to be angry. And that justifiable anger kills us. My anger came out in two forms. Either rage, I hurt you, or self-pity, I hurt me. This step has freed me from my anger. This is a program of forgiveness. Victims do not recover. Although in the eyes of the law, I was a victim, I cannot afford to be a victim in my own mind. Forgiveness does not mean that it was okay. Okay. No, it was not okay. You know, anger was my protection. For 26 years, I was a drug and alcohol counselor, and I loved, my favorite clients were the angry clients, because I knew there was somebody, just a hurt little girl, died inside that person. And so I had something to work with. Lack of forgiveness kept me living in the past, allowing my past to control me. I only have access to real power when I live in the moment right now. For years, I allowed my father to own my soul, even after he was dead. Today, I am grateful. My past no longer controls me. The fourth step freed me to get to the point of forgiveness. The fourth step allowed me to seek the professional help that I needed at that point in time. Again, if you have secrets, share them with somebody, and you can be free. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary Lou. That was great.
Oh, I forgot something. No God, no peace. No God, no peace.
Now we have question and answers. Anyone have a question? I have a question. After you did your fourth and fifth step, how different did you feel as a person? Did you feel like, you know, you were teachable?
I felt free.
Free? Same.
Yeah, I felt, you know, the load had been lifted.
Okay.
I didn't know that about you. Things make sense to me now through my walk with you, things that you were telling me. You have to forgive your father. No, I don't. I didn't do anything wrong. I remember that for the longest time. You kept telling me, nope, you have to make amends with your father. Thank you for doing that. But my question is irrelevant to all of this, and that is, I've always wondered what it meant to take a moral inventory. Can you give me an example of
okay,
how the
moral simply means looking at your assets and your liabilities. It's looking at the whole person. Okay, immoral means just looking at the bad parts.
Well, that's the part I saw in the fourth step.
Moral is looking at, and hopefully your sponsor pointed out some positive things.
I might have forgot.
But yeah, it's looking at the positive too. And usually we need help from another person. Like, I didn't think I had any positive. I didn't think I had any good points. I just knew I was this evil, rotten sinner.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does that appear when you're doing your fourth step? How do you pull the moral stuff out of it? I guess.
Well, sometimes it depends on the sponsor. Like, I usually have people say, you know, and I know we did this exercise. Okay, every day for the next 15 days, you got to write one positive thing about yourself.
Yes, you do. These tapes are recorded.
Hi, I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Greg.
As far as the moral part goes, the way it was explained to me, you can simply substitute the word moral with truthful. Okay? Mm-hmm. Make a searching and truthful moral inventory of yourself. Just use the word truthful and it all, it's like light bulb goes off. And Mary Lou, you can, I mean, if you have any comments on that one way or another.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, that's good.
Thanks.
I'm Jared. I'm an alcoholic. Throughout this process, I really like how you give a lot of examples and readings from the book, and I've, you know, through my journey here, I'm trying to learn, you know, I like how the book is a very simple instruction manual, and I like to try to stick to the book and learn what the book is telling us. And I think these three pages here are exactly what the book tells us to do. A lot of times I hear people add a fourth page with harms, other harms done to people. And when I think about trying to explain this to a new person, that makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, there's a lot of harms that people have done or deceived people and done things in their life that doesn't fit into a resentment or a fear. I think in a lot of those instances, after some discussion, a lot of them do relate back to a fear, but it takes some discussion to get there. Do you have an opinion one way or the other on that?
And I think a lot of that can fall under relationships. It says now, you know, about sex, but it's about relationships, that part of it. You know, looking at how my relationships have been selfish, self-centered, how I have used people, how I, you know, taken hostages. You know.
Cynical.
Hi, my name is Carol. Well, I have to say, Mary Lou, you brought back a lot of memories, and one of them was talking about praying for the people that you resent. Whoa, I hated my husband. He was terrible, and my sponsor said to me, you need to pray for him. And I said, no, I don't. I don't want to. I didn't want to. And he kept saying to me, but you really need to do that. But I don't know if he really explained why. It took a long time. I did it, but I really didn't understand why. But after a while, you were right, it set me free, and I didn't have the hatred and the resentment for this person anymore. But one other thing I want to say about the fourth step. When my sponsor said to me, do you feel any guilt about what you did in the past? And you know, for a while I didn't when I first got here. It wasn't that I didn't want to. I was just so screwed up that I didn't really have any guilt about all that horrible stuff. And it took a while, and I really couldn't do the fourth step until I was able to say, yeah. And it took a few months for me to realize that what I had done made me very guilty to the point where I could start working on the fourth step. So thank you.
So, yeah, I have, like this guy at work just makes me so angry. We don't know each other, and we never done anything to each other, but it's like on a daily basis, I'm like, oh God, please just let him be sitting somewhere else or keep his mouth shut today, you know, in the morning before work and stuff. And all I can do that I know of is, you know, pray for myself, like just stay calm and ignore it and, you know, nothing I can do. I've already asked him to shut up and he won't. So, like, how would I pray for him? You know what I mean? Like, how would that help me? Or should I just keep praying for myself?
No, you know, you need to pray for him. Like, one of the things that, you know, sometimes when I have trouble praying with sort of somebody, one of the things that I do is I ask God to take my human feelings, my anger, my resentment, my hatred, and replace them with His love. You know you don't want to love them. And then ask God, how can I be a service to this man? I know. I know.
Anyone else?
Hi, my name is Donald. I'm an alcoholic. I have a question about this. You want to pray for the guy and resentment for 2 weeks? 2 weeks?
Well, that's what it says in there. I tell the girls I sponsor a month.
Wow. Well, okay, I'll give it a try.
Thanks for a great meeting, everyone.